Good Sunday afternoon to you, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and our show today has been generously sponsored by Salumi Cured Meats. Salumi's mission is to provide customers with unique artisan cured meats that are full flavor and that challenge your traditional view of salami and cured meats. Their products are handmade from the freshest products produced in the Pacific Northwest and created from recipes based on Italian tradition, yet refreshed with innovation and uniqueness. The Batali family is the driving force of Salumi, and their objective is to stay small, hand-creating products for the national restaurants, delis, and specialty shops. For more information, go to salumicuredmeats.com. And as always, I would like to thank our super hip and talented producer, Jack Inslee. The title of our show today is So You Want to Be a Cheesemaker. We've all thought about it, or at least those of you who are out there listening have probably thought about it, but few of us actually do it. What seems in our minds to be a bucolic dream of grazing cows, ambling goats and sheep, and a few leisurely hours in the cheese house listening to NPR or classical music is in reality something quite different. I always say that in terms of work, farmers work the hardest, chefs work the second hardest, and then they're kind of varying degrees of everybody else. Being a cheesemaker, which I put in the farming category, is seriously hard work. Here to talk to us today to tell us about the highs and lows, the hows and whys of cheesemaking is Veronica Pedraza, cheesemaker at Jasper Hill Farm. Hello, Veronica.
Hi, Anne.
How you doing?
I'm great.
Good, good. And I want to mention, too, the number to call in should anybody have any burning questions about cheesemaking, farming, you know, relationships, lucky lotto numbers is 718-497-2128. So, Veronica, how did you become a cheesemaker?
Oh, God. I don't even know how to answer that question anymore. I was working in restaurants, working as a chef and doing front of the house stuff, and I wanted to move to the production side. So I had always wanted to have a restaurant with a farm attached. And
as if, you know, because a farm isn't like enough, or a restaurant isn't enough work, you might as well attach a farm, you know?
Exactly. Well, I had been in Morocco, and that was actually like a common practice, was, you know, not necessarily having just a garden, but like having a farm attached and cooking what you produced on the land. And I thought that was a pretty nifty idea.
It's like Blue Hill, eat your heart out.
Yeah. So I figured that I needed some farming experience, and I really like cheese. So that seemed like a practical application for my skill set. And I started looking for apprenticeships with cheesemakers and dairy folk. And I found that to be a lot harder than I originally anticipated.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, who did you call, and how did you, I don't know, how did you go about finding their names and their contact info and all that?
Well, I was living in Chicago at the time, and I had some good friends at Pastoral, which is a pretty nifty cheese shop in Chicago. And so they put me in touch with a few folks. My first inclination was to go to Wisconsin, which I love.
Because Wisconsin's awesome.
And I had gone to school there. And so the first people I actually contacted was Willie Lerner of Bluemont Dairy. And Willie is kind of like a little innovator in the cheese world. He's also built a single cave. And he's not too far off from Uplands, who were my second go-to. Willie never contacted me back.
Willie, shame on you.
Uplands was like, hell no.
Wait, didn't you say, did you encounter some difficulties being a girl looking for a cheesemaking job?
Oh, yeah. And I won't mention who told me that they wouldn't hire me, but because that would be rude. But, yeah, I was told by several people that they would not hire me because I was a woman. And
that's totally ironic, because on our show last week, we had this woman on who is a cheddar expert, and she was talking about how cheesemaking was always traditionally the woman's job on the farm. And somehow that switched in the 20th century when cheesemaking got more industrialized.
Sure. I definitely encountered that problem. And then I came to apprentice at Sweetgrass Dairy in Thomasville, Georgia, rather serendipitously. I had taken a production job in chocolate.
Okay.
In Chicago, and I went home for the holidays, and I drove, and on my way I passed Sweetgrass, and I was like, huh. It was really close. It was about 30 minutes away from where my mom lives.
Which is where?
Tallahassee, Florida.
Oh, okay.
It's right across the state line. And I tried to stop there on my way back, but they were, like, closed for the holidays. And when I went back to Chicago, I started seeing their products everywhere, and I sort of took it as a sign that I should contact them.
Totally.
And I contacted Jeremy Little, who's the owner and cheesemaker there, and it took about 6 months of persuasion for him to finally let me come on board. And I had to commit to a year in order to work there. Like, I originally planned on working for a couple months, and he was like, you're not going to learn anything in a couple of months. So I basically packed up a truck and moved all the way to Tallahassee, and I commuted to Georgia for a year working as a cheesemaker.
And what kind of cheeses did they make, or what was your first introduction to cheesemaking there? What kind of cheeses were you guys doing?
Well, they have goats on the farm, so they make farmstead goat cheeses, both aged and sort of soft-ripened lactic-set cheeses. And then they started their farm with the help of Jeremy's in-laws, who are, like, dairy farmers for, you know, about 35 years now. And they produce some of the best Jersey milk in the state of Georgia. So we also made cow's milk cheeses there.
Cool. Very cool. And then from there, so now you're at Jasper Hill Farm in Vermont. Mm-hmm. So how'd you come to work for Jasper Hill?
Well, that's really a great question. I came to work
I guess I know the answer to this question, but nobody, you know, I just think it's funny, like, everyone, you know, thinking about how you get these internships or stuff like that, you know, it's always kind of a nebulous thing. So I guess we'll just pound it out.
I have to say, this was probably the easiest job I've ever gotten. I was working for your shop, and I had moved to New York, you know, because I was in a relationship, and that subsequently didn't work out. So I wanted to go back to cheesemaking, and I lamented to you my situation, and you said, well, I'm going out to dinner with Mateo, and maybe he knows somebody that needs a cheesemaker. And so we went out to dinner at Prime Meats, and Mateo was like, you come be a cheesemaker? And that was after I don't know how many Manhattans. but he called me the next day and was like, were you serious? And I was like, yeah, I'm serious. So I went up to the farm for, like, a working interview, which a lot of people don't understand is necessary in order to come work on a dairy or as a cheesemaker.
How would you describe a working interview?
You know, I've required this of people that are coming to intern or apply for jobs as I've taken over, like, a managerial role at Jasper Hill. But basically going out to the farm for 3 or 4 days and actually physically doing the work, interacting with the employees there, because, you know, we are kind of like a little bit of a family, and we behave like a family oftentimes. Like, we do have laughing moments, but we also have moments where we want to kill each other. And
understood. You're in a hot, steamy cheese room for like 12 hours a day.
Yeah, and things don't always work out, you know, the way you want when you're working with a farmstead product. And there's long hours, and sometimes it seems never-ending. So you have to make sure that these are relationships that you want to have with certain people. And it goes both ways. Like, the cheesemaker needs to make sure that the person they're hiring is someone they want to work with, and that person needs to make sure that they want to work with the cheesemaker.
Yeah, yeah. And so obviously your working interview went well. And now you've been at Jasper Hill for how long?
For like 9 months now.
Awesome.
So coming up on a year in June.
That is, that's very, very cool. And so, can you just take us through like, a day? Like, what's a day in the life of a cheesemaker? Because, like we said, we want to, like, debunk all the romantic myths. So we got to tell people what it's all about.
All right. Wake-up call is around 4:30. I arrive to the farm around 5. Basically, you have to get your vat set up for milking, which also occurs around 5. So you need to time everything with the guy in the barn. And then basically from there, it's like a 10-hour mad dash to get everything done.
Wow.
If that. Sometimes it's a 12-hour, 14-hour day.
Wow.
It involves not only making cheese, but salting cheese, turning cheese, scraping cheese, and then, you know, I don't know how much cleaning, but a lot of cleaning.
I was going to say cheese making. I forget who told me that once, but that cheese making was like
glorified janitor.
Or like 20% cheese making and 80% dishwashing.
Yeah. And for most of the people that come to the farm, the washing and the cleaning and the sanitizing is like, I guess, the most, well, I mean, it's definitely tedious, but they're like, really? You don't mind doing this? And to me, that's kind of the easiest part of my day. That's the one thing that I know is a constant.
Uh-huh.
That's sort of the easiest thing to take care of.
And you have, like, certain synergies with the dishwasher, right? Wasn't the dishwasher originally named Veronica when you arrived at the farm?
Oh, the wash tank.
Oh, the wash tank, yeah.
Yeah, it's not so much a dishwasher as it's this giant vat of, like, hot acidic liquid that demineralizes all of the molds and mats and everything that we use to make cheese.
And that bad interns are put into when they don't clean up properly. No.
Yeah, I mean, learning how to use the wash tank is as much a part of learning how to be a cheesemaker. I just had to convince, I have 2 new interns this month, and they were both like, really? Like, what is there to learn about the wash tank? And I was like, there's a lot to learn, because if you don't know how to, like, load it properly and, like, organize your day, you can spend, like, an extra 2 hours cleaning stuff. So,
dang.
A big part of being a cheesemaker is organization and time management.
Yeah.
And if you're not good at those things, you shouldn't apply to be a cheesemaker.
You heard it here first from Sergeant Veronica Pedraza. If you can't take orders and if you're not organized, don't apply.
Yeah.
So what, you said you have 2 interns now. Mm-hmm. Is that a kind of a new thing for you guys at Jasper Hill?
When I came on, we had interns, and that's something that we're definitely trying to develop. I think that, you know, we do have a lot of that sort of romantic interest in cheese making, and a 3 or 6 month internship is a good way to kind of weed out those people that have sort of the more romantic notions of farming and find the people that really don't mind doing the cleaning and sort of the more messy stuff. And, you know, that gives people a great, like, background, I think, to pursue other cheesemaking jobs. One of the goals of our internship program is to basically provide, like, train cheesemakers and provide them to our satellite farms, who we purchase their green cheese and age it in the cellars at Jasper Hill.
And green cheese, for everyone out there who's in a cheese dork like us, is...
It is cheese that's a few days old.
Okay, so just brand new baby cheese.
Brand new baby cheese, and the sellers at Jasper Hill purchases green cheese from, we work with about 4 or 5 farms now, and we age, market, and distribute that product. But part of that project in the sellers is scaling production up.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to scale up production, you need to have qualified staff who know what they're doing. And
totally.
That's a big obstacle, is attracting people to a rural community and asking them to devote, I don't know, 60 hours a week to working.
Yeah. Are you kidding? To me, that's, you're living the dream. That sounds perfect. Well, I think we're going to take a short break. But when we come back, I want to talk to you more about sort of the basic 101s of cheesemaking and about what your plans are as a cheesemaker.
Okay.
So stick with us on Cutting the Curd.
Is it all in that pretty little head of yours? What goes on in that place in the dark? Well, I used to know a girl and I could have sworn that her name was Veronica. Well, she used to have a carefree mind of her own and a devilish look in her eye. These days I'm afraid she's not even sure that her name is Veronica. Do you suppose the way it's an hands on eyes? Veronica is trying to hide it all the time. She laughs at those who shout her name and steal her clothes. Veronica.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. Our show today again has been sponsored by Salumi Cured Meats. For more information, go to salumicuredmeats.com. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and our guest today is cheesemaker Veronica Pedraza. Did you like that little break music?
I didn't hear the break music.
Oh, man. I had him play Elvis Costello, the Veronica song.
Oh, awesome.
Dang. I thought that was going to be a good one. So we were talking about your interns at Jasper Hill and how those interns are hopefully going to go out and work for some of your satellite farms. Living in a rural community is not for everybody, and working, you know, 60 to 80 hours a week in a cheese house isn't for everybody. But I mean, it seems like there are more and more people who are interested in doing this kind of work.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
What are your interns usually like? Where are they from, and is there any kind of a common thread, or is it totally random?
As of lately, we get a lot of people with culinary background first and foremost, which I think is a good background to come from. I think if you're accustomed to working in a kitchen, you're accustomed to working in an uncomfortable environment that's usually hot and humid. usually requires long hours in a dark, cramped space. And, also there's the aspect of turning a raw product into, like, something that's actually produced. Whether that's, turning milk into cheese or taking vegetables and turning them into some kind of dish, I think that that's a natural transgression for people. But we're getting a lot of industry people, too, people like you who work more on the retail, wholesale, and distribution side of the business. There's sort of a natural curiosity of where their product is coming from.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's, interns of that nature are going to be able to provide their customers with more information, more education, and hopefully give them a better understanding of how to treat their product.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was first, sort of cheese-related job was, I guess I worked at Murray's for a summer, and then I went to Cato Corner Farm in Connecticut, and I always thought knowing how the cheese was made, that teaches you the most about how to take care of it and how to anticipate how it's going to taste today, tomorrow, in a week. It's super important.
Sure.
And so have any of these interns been successfully sort of placed on any of your farms yet, or is that still kind of a work in progress?
That's still a work in progress. Our best intern so far has been a British girl named Joby Williams, and she's finishing up a PhD in England, but she's possibly going to be the developer of curriculum for the School of Artisan Food, which produces Stitchleton.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So not necessarily working as a cheesemaker, but working in a new and exciting facet of artisan food.
Yeah. And and one that teaches more people how to make these kinds of foods.
These products.
Yeah. Well, what about you? What are your own plans and sort of goals for the future of in cheese making?
Hopefully to produce sheep's milk cheese.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely a shortage.
There's no sheep milk cheese around.
And I feel like I've finally nailed down what kind of cheese I want to make.
Can you tell us on the air, or is that super secret?
No, I can definitely tell you. I'm not entirely, sure about this, but I'm thinking I want to produce, a Serra de Estrella La Serena torta-style cheese.
Awesome.
Those seem to be in short supply, coming from Spain and Portugal to begin with, and in high demand.
Absolutely. And for everyone out there who may not have had one of these delicious cheeses, Serra da Estrella or La Serena, they're these sheep milk cheeses that are the curd. And I don't even know, you can fill in the blanks if I'm totally not explaining it right, but they're the curd is treated in a slightly different way. They're coagulated with thistle rennet usually. And they're just these runny, gooey, delicious kind of tangy.
Windermere-esque,
yeah, sheep's milk cheeses. Windermere being one of the cheeses made at Jasper Hill. So cool. So do you have do you have internship plans of your own, or do you think you're going to go to Spain and sort of apprentice with one of these cheesemakers?
Well, we have a dairy consultant that comes from France, a guy named Yvonne Larche.
Uh-huh.
And Yvonne works with a couple torta producers in Malaga, and so maybe next summer I'm going to go out there for a little while and learn to make cheese with him. I'm looking into some grants that would basically allow him to be kind of my tour guide and sort of my technician,
uh-huh,
helping me to duplicate those recipes and act as a translator, and not just translating the language, but translating the language of cheese.
Which is it's the Rosetta Stone, because you you go one place and they make it one way, and you could come home and do it the exact same way, but it would taste totally different and come out completely different.
Exactly. So, one thing about Jasper Hill is that, more than pursuing the artisan aspect of cheese, we're pursuing sort of the scientific aspect of cheese and, developing recipes that are based on pH, TA, really nerdy things like dry fat cheese moisture.
That is pretty nerdy, Veronica.
Yeah, I should have totally paid more attention in chemistry and biology class in school, but
that's okay.
I'm catching up.
Yeah, yeah. So
those are the kinds of things that really guide the AOC, mm-hmm, in terms of defining what makes Comté Comté, what makes Roquefort Roquefort, and that's something that's not really going on here in the United States, but if we want to play catch-up, I think that we're going to have to explore that.
I think that's so crucial, and that's so smart that through the help of Yvonne, the cheese ninja, you guys, just starting to change people's conception of what it means to make good cheese. And I think that's another thing, thinking about this bucolic kind of, artsy fartsy dream of being a cheesemaker, it's not like you leave all this up to chance. It's you do have to be a chemist and a biologist and sort of a stickler for hygiene and being
consistency
and
in your product.
Yeah. And so that being a cheesemaker, yeah, you're right. It's part artistry, part technical work, and lots of love.
It's really funny because Yvonne always talks about how you should never trust your instrumentation, which would be your pH meter and your titratable acidity, which is a way of measuring acidity in cheese. You need to have that sort of artisan aspect of knowing what sort of visual cues you're looking for, your break test and, sort of the whey coming up from the curd. There's all those kinds of clues that let you know that your instrumentation is lying,
mm-hmm,
which it generally is. But you need to figure out the delicate balance of using both of those things to come up with a consistent product.
So it's like part grandma baking an apple pie by hand and part grandma with, like, you know, yeah, the pH meter stuck in the apples.
It's like part Ferran Adria, part grandma in the cheese house.
That would be, oh my God, what would my grandma do with Ferran Adria? I would have to leave. That would be too funny.
So, you know, that's definitely the big challenge every day, is that the milk is never the same. No matter how hard we try to produce the same milk, we are always dealing with different milk.
Way to shift the blame to the cows, Veronica.
It's really all the cows' fault.
No, but what influences that, the difference in the milk?
Diet is the big thing, and balancing a cow's diet to produce a consistent milk is the most important thing. But there's all kinds of factors. You know, cows don't like to eat certain things that are good for them, just like people don't like to eat things that are good for them. and variables, like, you know, obviously seasonal changes. You know, when the cows go out on the grass, they start to eat a lot more. But we've found, at least with our herd, that our milk quality becomes poor when they're out on grass. And that's primarily because grass is 90% water, whereas hay is 100% solid. Mm. So I guess it's not to say that our milk becomes poor. We just have to treat our milk in a different way than we normally would in the winter months.
Right, right.
We have to cut our curd smaller. We have to stir more. We have to allow for more drainage, which means more turns. So you can't, like, make cheese by the clock.
Right, or buy a recipe book.
Yeah, you know, and like I always told people when I was cooking, you know, recipe, it's a guideline. It's not like the Ten Commandments. It's not something that you have to follow.
People don't pay attention to that too much either.
Every time. So yeah, you know, you have your benchmarks, but you have to sort of always be willing to adapt. So people that are like really rigid and not flexible also shouldn't be cheesemakers.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be willing, and like you said, sometimes you have to be willing to literally eat your mistakes if something doesn't come out the way that you want it to.
Or you can feed it to the pigs.
Or the pigs have to eat your mistakes. In that case, just providing you with more delicious bacon.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to sort of aspiring cheesemakers? What would you tell them to do to sort of explore a little bit more?
I guess number one, eat lots of cheese.
Okay.
Eat lots of cheese and figure out what kind of cheeses you like, and then perhaps pursue an internship either with Jasper Hill or another producer that you admire. Mm-hmm. And be prepared to sort of wake up early, go to bed late, work all the time, and be prepared to not know all of the answers. That was like, I think I like exhausted my two interns in the first week because I just sort of was like, I'm not going to cut anything out. I'm going to talk to you like I would talk to Mateo or my other cheesemaker, Blair, uh-huh, about sort of the scientific aspect. I was like, and not all the lights are going to go off when I'm talking, but you're just going to need to sort of go with the flow. And I was like, and the light bulbs will go off as time goes on.
Like you said, it's like a translation, like learning the language of cheese making, because that's it's a really subtle thing, and it's infinitely kind of complicated. So you just have to discover it a little bit at a time.
The other thing is to understand that it's never just one thing that affects your product. It's like a domino effect in cheese making. It might be one thing, but that one thing affects multiple other variables in your process. So you have to sort of be content in never understanding what is going wrong or what is going right. And, you know, if you're a good record keeper, you'll start to notice what is going right or what is going wrong. But you need to be, you know, that whole thing about cheese making is 80% cleaning and 20% cheese making. I want to like break that down in a different way. I think it's 75% cleaning, 15% record keeping, and 10% cheese making.
Wow. Wow. So yeah, I guess you just have to, and some, you have to know what you're doing, but then also, yeah, just kind of have,
sort of be content not knowing what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I certainly don't really know what I'm doing, and that I get comfort in that every day. So, well, I think unfortunately we are out of time. But I want to thank you so much for, you know, chatting with me on a Sunday afternoon. And who knows, you might see like scores of interns coming from people who've listened to the Heritage Radio Network. Hopefully,
well,
we can get some more up there.
If they're interested, they can go to the sellers at jasperhill.com website, and there is an application form.
Awesome. So
for interns. So
sellers at jasperhill.com.
.com.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I will surely talk to you very soon. And thanks again for joining me on Cutting the Curd.
You're welcome. Bye, Anne.
Bye.